This is TWiT.
On the line with us from DP Review, Rishi Sanyal. He is a obviously a great photographer, but also a reviewer at DP Review. And he has taken a look at smartphone photography. Rishi, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, Rishi. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
These images are very interesting. I guess we could kick off by saying, all right, which is better, the Pixel 2 XL or the iPhone 10?
I don't want to take sides. They each have their strengths.
So it's not like you could say this one is head and shoulders above that one.
For certain purposes, one is probably better than the other. We recently published our review of the Google Pixel 2 as well as the iPhone 10, and we did call the Google Pixel 2 the best smartphone for stills photographers because some of the computational approaches it uses are just amazing, and it allows it to catch up to traditional cameras, if not exceed them in certain ways. Apple is also doing an amazing job pushing the entire field forward with a wide color gamut photography and high dynamic range photography. So they each have their strengths, and hopefully we can talk a little bit about what makes them great.
Let's actually go back one shot. Let's look at that picture. This is your daughter, beautiful daughter. It's Kira.
Kira.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And this is
a Pixel 2 XL, right?
Yes.
But there's something interesting going on here.
You're absolutely right. So I'm focused on my daughter, Kira. That's the nearest person. That's what the phone focused on. But funny enough, her nanny behind her is also in focus. But meanwhile, her nanny's arm is out of focus. So this is a little funny example because this is a computational approach, and the Pixel 2 generates a depth map from its dual pixel array, which actually sees two different perspectives from behind one lens. And from that, it has some stereo disparity from which it can calculate what's behind and what's in front of and how far behind and in front of the focus plane any object is. And it combines that depth map with some understanding of what's in the scene. So it analyzes the scene and finds faces and human subjects and tries to keep human subjects in focus. So in that case, it's funny because it chose to keep both the my baby and the nanny in focus, but apply a very like F2 or so equivalent level of shallow depth of field to everything else in the scene. And that actually speaks to something really cool about these computational approaches, because you can exceed traditional optical methods and enhance them. For example, if you shoot with an f1.2 lens at 85 millimeter, you know, you might get my one eye in focus, but then my other eye will be out of focus, my ear will be out of focus even more. But with these computational approaches, you can just say, you know what, I'm going to have extended depth of focus for the entire face, but then use an optically accurate blur for everything else in the scene, down to even f1.0. You can simulate crazy, crazy F numbers and crazy amounts of blur.
So we call that the bokeh in the background, the blurry part in the background. That's entirely simulated?
That is. So these, if you go forward a little, those images are a little funny. It's simulated, but it's also optically accurate, because what it's doing is building a heat map, which is, I think you pulled that image up earlier, where you saw this red and blue representation of the person and the stuff around her. So that heat map, yeah, there you go. So the redder it is, the darker red it is, the more out of focus and behind the focus plane the object is. And if you see some of the blue in the front at the bottom of the image, that's actually telling it to blur, and it's in front of the focus plane. So these computational techniques can figure out if an object is behind and how far behind, or in front and how far in front of the focus plane, the focused object any object is. And all it does is, it's fascinating, once it has this heat map, it then just replaces every pixel with a circle, basically a disc, of the same color and brightness as that pixel. And that's why it looks
like bokeh. Oh my God. So that's normally created by the shutters, but it's done computationally. That's amazing.
Exactly. Yeah.
It can give you weird effects like that arm being out of focus, mm-hmm. but it is, you do want to see the nanny, and you want to see the two faces. So it's doing something intelligent, but that's the difference between a human who might choose to make that stuff in focus and a camera, a computer. It doesn't know exactly which is which, but it's doing a surprising good job. Didn't Apple invent this with portrait mode, though? Isn't this Apple's technology?
It's not quite invented by Apple. A lot of people have been doing it using different approaches, like dual lenses. Basically, you need two separate perspectives. So you can either do it using two lenses, or you can do it using one lens, but split pixels behind that lens that can see two different perspectives. So if you see in this image, the two photodiodes at the bottom here, they actually see slightly different perspectives behind the lens. There's actually an animated GIF. It's a black and white image. There you go. So if you look all the way on the right, if you look at the background behind the girl's face, you'll actually see it shifting up and down.
Oh, yeah.
But her face is actually not. So basically, this is actually showing you what the subpixels are seeing. So when something is in focus, there's not much disparity. But when something's far away from the focus plane, there's more disparity. And so it uses that information to build a depth map. You can actually just try this yourself by holding two fingers in front of you, focus on one finger, then just blink your left and right eyes. And you'll see that the finger that is out of focus, that you're not focusing on, moves left and right as you blink your eye. If you move it behind the finger in focus, it'll move in the opposite direction as you blink left and right.
Yeah, but so your eyes are 4 inches apart. These pixels, how far apart are these pixels?
That's a very good point. On the Pixel 2, it's less than a 1 millimeter disparity.
Holy cow.
So, but from that, it's still able to build a depth map by... they use this technique where they look at the disparity, but then they sort of upscale and generate a higher resolution depth map than you would normally get from just that small disparity. And as you can see from the results, sometimes it's better than a dual lens approach, because one of the problems with the dual lens approach is when you have two lenses very far away, if they see two different things, there can be a mismatch, and that can cause confusion.
So one of the differences between the Pixel 2 and the iPhone 10 is that you can adjust the Pixel 2 photos after, right? I mean, can you talk a little bit about that?
The bokeh, or
yeah,
just
the bokeh.
Generally?
Yeah, you can adjust the bokeh effect to make it less or more after, or can you do that with both now?
So actually, you can do that with the iPhone 10 and third-party apps with the iPhone 10, because the iPhone makes the depth map that they build available to third-party apps. So there's a cool app called Focos, F-O-C-O-S, which allows you to simulate an f1.0 equivalent blur. Or you can even simulate, do you guys know Lens Babies?
Yes. You know,
like,
that's
yeah,
good.
You can even simulate funny effects like swirly bokeh or like onion ring bokeh. There's all sorts of things you can do computationally by having that depth map. Google right now has made some of their approaches like HDR Plus available to third-party apps using their Visual Core. It's an actual chip built into the phone so that other apps can take advantage of the HDR Plus algorithm that Google Pixel uses, which we should talk about because it's what makes that camera catch up to traditional cameras. But right now, there aren't that many third-party apps that can change the focus right now on the Pixel 2.
Ironically, Google did not use in its own camera app that special visual processor. We learned that just recently. Ron Amadio got a note, and they said, Google said, oh, yeah, we didn't use it in our camera. We didn't need to in our camera app.
We didn't need to. Yeah, exactly. It's fast enough. Kind of funny.
It's bizarre because you don't put a chip in not to use it.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow.
I don't understand that at all.
Waiting for the next phone?
I'm fairly certain they'll use it at some point some purposes. Go ahead.
I've noticed that with the Pixel 2...
Which you're using for the first time because you did the swap with
right.
Jason Howell.
I normally use an iPhone 10, and I've used an 8 and a 7 and all of them. But I've noticed that the color of people's faces is a little different with the Pixel. Just a little greenish. Can you talk about that?
I actually noticed the same thing. There's some work to be done in the color science on the Pixel phones, as well as the auto white balancing. It's very the auto white balance is almost so good that it sometimes neutralizes the color cast that we actually want to keep, whereas the iPhone tends to swing towards warmer tones. So sometimes the Pixel 2 can lead to cooler. That's an iPhone image, and you have a nice warm skin tones. But if you go to the next image, sometimes the skin tones end up being a little bluish, cool, and greenish, especially the darker the skin tone is what we noticed. So, but that's something that can just... The funny thing about all these cameras on the smartphones is that every single firmware update can totally change the performance of the camera, which is something we're not used to with traditional cameras. So you can see performance accelerate just by a simple firmware update.
So one of the things also that that Apple touted was different skin colors. Darker skin colors are still like pop in the photos. Is that something that Google has also promised in their phone?
They do a lot of context-sensitive decisions, so both phones will break down the image into its components and figure out how to process the colors and lighting for a person versus the background, things like that. So they just do things a little differently, and they're constantly evolving. Apple has this wonderful thing called portrait lighting or portrait relighting. If you pull up the picture of have a picture of my daughter Kira on a couch.
This is my favorite. It's beautiful.
Oh, gorgeous.
It's amazing. It looks like it was taken. It looks like it was taken not just with a real camera, but also lit interestingly. And so what Apple does is it actually analyzes the image, finds a face, builds a 3D map of it, and then tries to highlight the nose, the cheeks, the chin, and create like interesting lighting. Mm-hmm. This image actually shows you the in gray is all the areas where Apple is actually starting to use colors that most other devices have not traditionally used, because we have displays now that can display what's known as wide color gamut. So basically, this is in the P3 color space, which is what Hollywood has adopted as the new color space for movies. So basically, Apple's new devices can capture and represent and show colors that most other devices can't. And the gray shows you what some of those colors are. But you'd have to have a wide gamut device to actually see those colors. But they're coming. All OLED displays are wide gamut. And Apple is leading the field here and being showing the saturation in colors while maintaining color accuracy, which is a really, really important thing.
What about printing these photos? Are they best? Do they look best on the iPhone screen or on the Pixel screen? Or how are they when you print them?
That's a great question, because what they've done is they've optimized the sharpening and noise reduction for the screens themselves. So they actually use a lot of large radius sharpening. And when you look at them on traditional displays that are not Retina, they seem to sometimes look over sharpened. And when you go to print them, it's actually the sharpening is actually pretty good for print. But what ends up happening is these displays on these devices now are just, they're just so good and they're so bright and they can show so much color that they actually exceed what prints can show. And so a lot of people end up being disappointed when they print, because prints can only get so bright. They have to be lit, right? And so the dynamic range of these displays are so high that prints end up being somewhat disappointing. And the dynamic range of this, especially the iPhone X, is actually the reason why Apple has chosen, Apple is the only company, this is the first product in the world which has taken HDR, not HDR as you traditionally think about it, which is darkening the skies and brightening the shadows for HDR photos. This is actually doing something a little different. It takes the HDR capture and it then tries to re-expand it to have large contrast, so it's closer to the real world. And so we've seen this in the video world. I don't know if you heard about HDR video, like Dolby Vision and HDR10. So the video world is going there, but this is the first device that'll actually do HDR display of HDR photos. And that's a really, really cool thing that Apple's pushing forward.
And so are you seeing a lot of photographers who are now preferring to use the iPhone or the Pixel versus a regular camera?
Absolutely. I mean, I just went on vacation to Mexico the other day and I took my A7 R3 full frame camera, 28 millimeter lens and 55 millimeter f1.8 lens. But the iPhone here has two lenses on it. One is 28 millimeter, the other is 55. So it's almost the same without me having to change lenses. Now, when light levels drop, the advantages of a larger sensor are still apparent, and especially focus. But even there, we're seeing cameras, especially with the Pixel 2, catch up, because if you take a look at the focus speed of this thing, this uses dual pixel autofocus. Mm-hmm. If you just look at how fast it focuses, I don't know if you can see this, mm-hmm. between my hand, background, hand, background. I mean, it's just nearly instantaneous. So it can actually focus on running toddlers even. So the autofocus, and this even works in low light, and it's because it can use the entire sensor for autofocus. And it also has this thing called HDR Plus where it's constantly capturing 9 frames all the time. So when you press the shutter button, the Pixel 2 actually goes back in time 9 frames and then picks them, aligns them all and averages them to simulate the image quality of a sensor 9 times its size, which means it can actually compete with Micro Four Thirds camera image quality. because it's capturing nine times as much light, which means it's capturing as much light as a Micro Four Thirds camera. So it's kind of insane.
Is there a winner when it... This, by the way, this is interesting. These are your camera charts.
Yes.
And look at this closely, because one of these is shot with a Micro Four Thirds system.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is shot with what, the iPhone or the Pixel 2?
Pixel 2. And even if you zoom in...
The clarity... So how do they do that? I mean, this is... In a way, you could say computational photography was just responding to the necessity of having very small, kind of junky, frankly, sensors on cameras and trying to get them to look better. But at this point, it looks to me, and I think this was your conclusion, that you actually, on a Pixel 2 XL, are getting resolution comparable to a Micro Four Thirds lens. That's a lot bigger sensor.
Which is which?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Resolution and noise performance, and even sometimes more dynamic range, because it's doing that 9-frame image averaging. So they're trying to make up, exactly as you said, they're trying to make up for the small sensor size by using computational approaches. So in this case, it's all about how much light you captured. So larger sensors, full-frame sensors, they perform better because they capture more light, which means they have lower what's known as shot noise or statistical noise. But you can do the same thing by just capturing multiple frames and averaging them. The trouble there, though, is that when you capture multiple frames, you know, what if there's a subject moving,
right?
But the Pixel 2 actually takes those 9 frames, breaks each frame up into thousands of little small tiles, and then aligns each individual tile. So if something moved from here to here and it's not blurry in either image, it'll actually take this object moved here and move it back here and align it. And then average it. And once you average it, you actually simulate a larger sensor. And that's exactly why it's able to catch up.
Yeah.
And it does it, like, instantaneously.
Is one of these two cameras, the iPhone 10 or the Pixel 2 XL, a winner in low light? Because that is always the hardest thing. Mm-hmm. We've been talking a little bit about that.
Yeah, in low light, the Pixel 2 is a winner because what the iPhone does is it drops to a very slow shutter speed, like 1/4 of a second, to capture more light. But then, I mean, 1/4 of a second, no one
can
even stay still.
Yeah.
You can barely handhold it, plus, you know, subjects can't stay still. Whereas the Pixel 2 will rarely drop below 1/30 of a second. But since it averages 9 frames, that's almost, in the photography world, we call it about 3 1/3 stops. Of extra advantage.
Amazing.
So it's taking those 1/30 of a second exposures and then just averaging them together to not have motion blur, but still get the advantage of as if you shot a long shutter speed.
On the other hand, the iPhone 10 has this, I've been playing with this focus app you mentioned. Mm-hmm. You couldn't do this on a Pixel 2, right? Because this is taking imaging information that only the iPhone captures, or no?
So there's no reason you couldn't, theoretically. It's just that right now that depth map has not been made available to third-party apps.
So Google does have that depth map.
Yes.
This is remarkable. You can go from... can you pick this up, Anthony? Yeah, let me just... This is an F20. This is, in effect... Let me make sure I'm screen mirroring over to Anthony. He's got a program running. So this is an F20... shot of my wife Lisa in a lamp store, and it's not a great shot because it's so busy behind her, but I can slide this all the way over to f1.4 and completely, but not only that, I can she's wearing a crown, which you wouldn't see before. I can then choose the lens I'm going to be using. I can choose even what bokeh, like you can choose from bokeh. Now tell me what this is, because this is wild. I can also move the back bokeh.
So that's actually showing you a representation of that depth map. So it's kind of like it's a different way of visualizing that heat map that I showed you earlier.
Is that wild or what?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
So now I can choose and I can say, okay, that's her face. I want to have the depth map. You know, I want to have everything but that in back book. This app blows me away, but not so much because it's a great app, which it is. Look, you can change the kind of bokeh. You can have
you can even simulate an STF lens. Do you remember STF lenses that have really smooth bokeh?
Yes.
Gaussian?
Yes.
You can actually simulate that.
You can have an Otis. You can have a freaking Otis lens here, a Zeiss Otis lens. This is mind boggling.
Or a lens baby if you really like those weird onion ring bokeh. You can do anything. And that's something that's gonna be coming down the road for all these computational devices, because that's what you can do after the fact. You can refocus. I'm sure you're familiar with Lightro. These tiny devices are now doing what Lytra was doing back in the day.
So this is a good example. This is available on the iPhone, but you're saying that kind of image information is available on the Pixel 2 if Google would just make it available to third parties.
Yeah, and I'm sure they will. Yeah. And especially if they've made HDR Plus available.
Right.
And especially, I can't wait to see HDR Plus in RAW. That would be really cool because as these cameras are getting really good, even like pro photographers and enthusiast photographers are going to want to use them. And at that point, some people want to work with RAW. And there's no reason why you can't align all those 9 images and then provide a RAW file that allows you to recover even more highlights or shadows. And actually, the Pixel 2 is the first device that I'm aware of that does what we've been asking camera manufacturers to do forever, which is use this what's known as ETTR, or exposed to the right philosophy, which is expose your scene so that the highlights that you care about are as close to clipping but not actually clipped to white.
Right, that's typically how I will shoot, actually.
Yeah. And on the A7R III, it's funny enough, this first camera that if you shoot the A7R III in RAW but turn on HLG and zebras, it actually gives you an accurate representation of where the clipped pixels are in the RAW file. The Pixel 2 just does it automatically. And that's the thing about these phones. You just push one button, and they will optimize the exposure and then do all the tone mapping in HDR. Take a look at some of those Arizona images I have in that album there of sunset. Those are images where the foreground would be black on any camera.
Right.
But with one button press, you have a perfectly exposed image just out of camera.
It's just the beginning. We're just in the beginning of this stuff. And already, what's great is you have a wonderful head-to-head competition between Apple and Google on this. And they're both pushing each other to get better and better and better. Mm-hmm. Very, very exciting. And it's amazing what Google's able to do with one lens that Apple does with two. You can read all about it in Rishi's review, a DP review, smartphone photography, and more of those images. If you can look at the images, it will really bring it all home to you. And you've done a really great job, I think, of showing what these cameras are doing. You have more than one article, though. This is the Pixel 2 review, right?
This is a shootout between portrait modes on the iPhone 8 Plus and the Google Pixel 2. And then we have the Pixel 2 review as well as the iPhone 10 review separately. And then we have a comparometer, a widget that allows you to compare any camera to any camera. And the phones are in there, too.
And so you can slide it back and forth and look at the...
Yeah, exactly. You can look around the scene 100% or wherever. There you go. Right there shows you. I think that was. You know, this is really interesting because you can see here. Look at the level of detail the Pixel 2 maintains versus a Micro Four Thirds camera. The iPhone 10 doesn't quite have that level of detail because it's not using that image stack as much image stacking as Pixel is using. But you can look around the scene and see where they excel and where one is better than the other compared to different cameras. I mean, as these smartphones get really good, you will want to compare them to even full frame cameras. If you look at the I don't know if you have time, but there's a full frame shot of my wife feeding my daughter with a milk bottle in the photo album, and right next to it is a shot with the Pixel 2. And if you look at the background, there you go.
Wow.
If you look at the background blur, if you go one right, I mean, you can't even. Oh, one left, sorry. It's kind of hard to tell which one is which.
Which one's which?
Yeah, one has the lens flare.
I like the one on the right.
Yeah.
Is that the camera phone?
That's a Pixel 2, yeah.
Oh, man. And I just bought an A9. Oh, my God.
That's fun.
Yeah. And you can make phone calls with it. So.
And you have a digital assistant that auto-stitches together your favorite memories for you, finds the animated GIFs from your movies, it finds the most interesting moments. It's amazing. Mm-hmm.
I have to admit, I brought my Sony with me on my last vacation, but I also brought a Pixel 2. Almost all the pictures are Pixel 2. It's just easier, it's faster, and it gets great shots. It's kind of amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it, Rishi. And thank your wife for taking Kira out for a walk while we...
Thank you so much. It's really been
fun.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Rishi Sanyal is the science editor. What a great title for DP Review at dpreview.com.